Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And first of all, it's not just any Talk Magic. It is Christmas Day. So happy Christmas. And I wanted to provide a gift for everybody on Magic TV, the gift that keeps on giving. So I have arranged an interview with one of the most requested interviews I've had. This gentleman has been requested more than people like Jay Sankey and Richard Sanders and anybody. And I think one of the reasons is I talk about him on the channel all the time. Me and Lloyd talk about him all the time on the podcast. He is one of my best friends in magic. He is also, when I say the words the best kept secret in magic, I genuinely mean it. He is absolutely unbelievable. He is an incredible performer. I am proud to call him a friend. And anybody who knows him will tell you just how awesome he is, not just at sleight of hand, but also as a performer with a very unique, very, very unique sense of humor, which you're going to experience over the course of this interview. I am, of course, talking about the legend himself, Mr. Nemhard Phoenix. How are you doing, Nem?
Well, what an epic load of bollocks, Craig. Well, then I mostly agreed to do this to see what you could possibly say at the beginning of my interview. I didn't think you could do it. I didn't think you could do your usual creepy introductory overpraise bullshit for me because nobody knows who the hell I am, but you've managed it. Well done. Your ratings will somehow dip. I mean, it's physically impossible, but by putting me on, you'll actually lower your view count on YouTube.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Especially so many people, like, obviously, you're quite well known in the UK. Amongst workers, amongst the working magicians, you know, people that we've had on this channel, the Owen Stricklands, the Mark Waddingtons, the Jester Styles, Tom Mullingers of the world, obviously know who you are. Tom Mullinger goes on record as saying you're one of the best coin workers he's ever met. But there's going to be people out there that kind of go, who? Because you've never actually...
Many.
Yeah, there's going to be a few people that go, who? Because you've never actually released a product. It's not something that's been on your agenda. But as somebody who's been out and worked and gigged with you on a regular basis, you know, we were out just a couple of days ago doing a gig together. We're out probably at least once a week doing gigs together. I know how awesome you are. And I've worked, and I'm not just saying this, you know, mate, you know more than anybody. I will completely and totally say it as it is. And you know, and I also know that you're not the biggest, you're not great at taking praise, and you're a bit self-depreciating, but you, my friend, are fucking awesome at what you do, and I have a hard job even keeping up with you when we're at a gig together, and I genuinely mean that.
Oh.
And one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the channel is obviously, and you know this because you watch and listen to a lot of Magic TV, this channel is set up to give people advice on magic, and you have more advice within your mind than most people have, because I don't think that there's many magicians that do as many gigs as you. You know, while every other magician in the country during lockdown, during that 18-month period of time that we couldn't perform, while every other magician was scrabbling around to do virtual shows and stuff like that, you were just like, I'll just wait it out. You know, I'm not going to be an Amazon driver. I'm not going to be a virtual performer. When gigs come back, I'll do that. I'll be fine. And that's because you're just so busy. You're just so busy.
I'm slightly lazy. I mean, well, no, I just didn't want to do virtual shows. There's nothing wrong with doing them. I didn't actively just want to do them. I just don't see the appeal. So I wanted to get back to lives.
I know. Despite me trying to get you to do virtuals, it just didn't happen. But yeah, so I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions. I'm going to be trying to get a lot of advice out of you. I want to pick your brain on a lot of things. But as I do quite often on Talk Magic, for people that don't know who you are, I want to give them a bit of a frame of reference, because two things that are so inspiring about you. And the first is you haven't got your typical origin story, and that you didn't do, behave, you didn't do that thing where, you know, like, I saw a kid pull a coin from behind an ear, and you got into magic quite late, didn't you? Can we talk about your origin story for a minute?
Sure. Okay. Well, I'll start off by addressing the several elephants in the room. One, yes, my name is Nemed Phoenix. That's not a stage name. It's just a very bad thing that happened to people in the 70s. And I'll bring this up because I want to point out that, yes, I'm aware that the creepy lady wallpaper behind me is questionable. The house has also not been decorated since the 70s, just to clarify. What was the question? Oh, yeah, origin story.
Origin story.
Yeah. I actually do have pretty much every single one of the traditional origin stories. They just didn't stick. I've got like a granddad that pulled coin out my ear. I went, ooh, that's good, and moved on. Slightly weird uncle that showed me a couple of card tricks. Paul Daniels' magic set, and did a couple of shows and then put it away. Watched Paul Daniel, pretty much all of them. They didn't sort of stick until a friend, Craig Rogers, not a magician, showed me a few tricks a long time ago, about 15, 20 years ago.
So how old were you then at that point?
I'd have been, it's 2005, so that's 17 years ago. So I would have been, I don't do maths, 30 something. 28. He showed me a couple of tricks, but got me rehooked into it at exactly the same time an ex of mine took me to see Darren Brown, Something Wicked This Way Comes, and that's what got it. I mean, I spent hours up after watching that show trying to figure it out, studied mentalism for a while just for my own interest, and then found the Devil's Picture Book DVDs, got into that. So that shifted me into more magic because I'm more interested in, it's easier to start off in magic than it is mentalism.
Yeah, it's interesting though that you kind of got into it through Darren Brown and reading Darren Brown's books, but although you do mentalism, that's never been your focus. It's been magic. It's very interesting because most people, I saw David Blaine, but you came into it through Darren Brown, but you didn't really focus on mentalism that much.
No, well, I am writing a mentalist stage show at the moment, to come back to it. Probably know more about it than I do magic, which means there's a lot of useless junk in here.
So you got into it, and you started learning because one thing that I've always told people is you're so well-read, and we'll talk about that later on, but you've got so much knowledge, you've read so many books, you've got you're so organized with all of the magic DVDs and projects that you've studied, and like, was that right? Yeah. Was that right from the very beginning though, Nem? Like from the very beginning of like, were you like engrossed in learning magic, or did that come later?
Yeah, whatever I'm into, I always get very obsessed. I don't get into very many things very much, but once I do, I really do. Obviously at 28, I got into magic. So before that, I trained as an actor. That was my main focus. That's all I thought about. I'm not the best actor in the world. So I moved out of that, did a few bar jobs for a while and discovered magic. And once I got into that, I was heavily focused on that, just obsessively reading and studying. And
okay, so two questions on that. Number one, has your training as an actor helped you as a magician? And would you advise people, because I get the question on the channel all the time, how can I become a better performer? And I've said to people in the past, take acting lessons, go to an improv acting school and learn that side of things. Would you say that that's important? Did that help you with, you know, your role now as a professional?
To a degree, I'd say. It helps a bit because you don't need to be Al Pacino to be a magician. You just need to be able to perform reasonably well. I'd say stuff that came later on in my career was better for my performing style than the acting, but it can't hurt for sure. Yeah. Especially if you want to do more of a character style thing than I do.
Okay.
But I also advise everyone not to. After graduating acting school, my very first play was a guy called James Purefoy in it, playing one of the secondary parts. And I saw that and thought, oh, that's what acting is supposed to be looking like. That's when I just gave up. So even I don't know what I'm saying at this point, Craig, what the hell am I talking about?
You're answering my question. It's all good. It's all good. Fantastic. Okay, cool. So I suppose the next question is, when did you go pro? And how did that happen? Because obviously, you know, you're 28 years old. You've stopped doing acting at this point. So you're working in bars and managing bars, I believe, at this point, when you got into magic. You've become obsessed with it. How did that transition into a pro? Because you've been a professional magician as long as I've known you, and I've known you over a decade.
To begin with, while I was studying stuff for my own interest, it didn't even occur to me that it could be a job, really. But as well as the friend getting me into magic and the Darren Brown show, about the same time-ish, I think, been a long time ago, I'm old, I think I came across the first iteration of Illusions Magic Bar, which was back then pure Magic Bar, Mark Bennett's first Magic Bar, and I saw Matt Wright behind the counter. And Darren got me into magic. 20 minutes watching Matt Wright got me into, I want to do this for a living. I was sold completely. That was what I wanted to do. At the time, I was living in Lancaster, and I just started searching, and I got myself one restaurant and one nightclub residency, which I did for about a year. And that's where I started, pretty much, which is good because it gave me a year in a fairly small, secluded town to get all the early cheesy magic crap out of the way. Wear the white jacket, all the crap lines, everything that I now can't stand to see in any magic act. And then by the time I got out of Lancaster, hopefully I had some taste.
Well, I wanna get into what happened in a second when you came out of Lancaster, but I've got a question for you, and I want some advice on this. Obviously, you saw Matthew Wright. Now, one thing that Matthew's known for, I mean, he's exceptional at so many things, but one thing that Matthew does so well is the thinker card, where you have somebody just like, look at a card, remember it, and without having them pick a card or take a card out, you tell them what the card is. Something that I don't really do. I've gone on record on this channel, and I'll say it again right now, nobody, including Matthew Wright, does the think of a card any better than you. And I genuinely mean that. Like, I've watched you do it over and over again, time and time again, to drunk spectators, assholes, idiots, people that are purposefully screwing you over. And I'm like, why is he doing this to this person? And you nail it every single time. So I suppose there's two questions here. One was watching Matthew. Did that, like, this has been a staple of your repertoire for a long time. Did that influence the fact that you wanted to do think of a card? And the second question is, do you have any advice for people that are wanting to learn this routine?
Oh, absolutely. It was all Matthew that got me to that. He showed me that on the first time I saw him. And as I told him, I was getting into magic, and I'd done a bit by then. He had a sit with me afterwards and showed me how it was done and talked me through it and helped me with it. It's entirely his fault. And then about 10 years later, I haven't seen him for about 10 years. Some guy grabbed me at Blackpool, dragged me over to him and went, "Oi, Matt, this guy does think a car better than you." Oh, Jesus. Thanks. That's...
That's funny. Have you got any advice on it? Like, because it's one of these things that magicians talk about, but a lot of magicians don't do, because it very possibly can go wrong. And I think that there's that. The reason a lot of magicians don't do it is they're scared of what happens if it completely goes wrong. Well, you're completely fearless with it.
The secret to the thinker card is it's not hard.
Really? I've always found it quite hard, to be perfectly honest.
It can't really go wrong. It's a multiple outs style routine done properly. Fan the cards, get the card shuffled, fan them out. Card shuffled. Have you got me a full screen? Can you see the cards?
You're on full screen. Yep.
Take a look at a card. Have you got one?
Yep.
So you've just said, yeah, no, so the likelihood is somewhere in this bunch here.
Yes. I'm
cut that to the bottom. Under the ones I got to the bottom. Before I look at the cards at all, I'm going to say it's a red card, right?
Yep.
If you had said black, I'd have gone. My usual gag is, it's a black card, right? I get that within two questions every single time. I don't know how I do it. I impress myself. I know. Calm down. But I know, if you said red, I'm just going to go straight for it. I'm going to have a look. I'm going to fan the whole deck, not just the bit that I'm looking at, obviously, and the whole deck. I'm looking down here. I've got a good shuffle here this time. There's very few red cards. I'm going to sort of casually cut them to the top. I'm going to get myself a worse example, so it's easier to explain everything. Let's say there are three cards three potential cards. I've got three potential cards that I think it's going to be on the top. I'm going to palm the top one. I usually go with instinct on which one I think it's going to be. I'm going to go with this one. I've got one palmed, one ready to go here. If I'm really relatively confident it's going to be one of these two, I'll stop there. Mm-hmm. If not, I'll casually pocket this one and re-palm this one. So now I have one in the palm, one in here, and one in the pocket.
Got it.
If that's it. So I'm going to go, in your case, I'm going to say you're thinking of a red card. You're thinking of a heart.
Yes.
I'm thinking of the Queen of Hearts.
Yes. Yeah, I was.
Yeah. I had that one in my pocket. I shouldn't have put that one in my theoretical pocket. I should have kept that in my hand because I was pretty confident that was the one. And my favourite out is always the hand. The one in the pocket is good, but I actually get a better reaction from this really weird, simple thing where I just sort of bend it out like this, flick it out. There you go. I'm saying, okay, name your card out loud for me. And
Queen of Hearts.
What I normally do, and you go Queen of Hearts, and I go, oh, it's this one. But the point is, if I'm really stuck, I've got one in the cup pocket, one here, and one here. And let's say that you are one of the people that I had last week who said yes to red card and then told me Queen of Clubs. I'll just go, oh, Queen of Clubs. I mean, there is no way for this routine to go wrong. I just go, oh, the Queen of Clubs. You saw the Queen of Clubs.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I'm just going to cut it at the top, palm it off, put it in the pocket. That's my unlucky card. I would take that one out of the pack before I start. Feel free to check it out. But the actual original mechanics of the think of a card is just like, think of a card. Have you got one?
Yep.
Yeah. And stop when there's a yes. It's likely to be in that range.
Yep.
I think Matt used to ask a couple of questions. I try to avoid a couple of questions. I want to go with just knowing whether it's red or black and going on from there. I don't ask about high, low or suit or anything like that. Not hard, but it's strong, much stronger than picking a card.
It is. It is. It's like, I've seen you absolutely slay with it. And it's one of those tricks that will work, mix and mingle, but it'll also work on a big banquet style table as well. It'll work in most environments. Yeah, it's a great, you use it to open your card set, don't you? Or your close-up set, use it as an opener.
I use it pretty much 75% of the time for picking a card when I'm not doing a side steal for some other routine.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That's great advice. That really is. So back to your story. So you've decided that, you've got yourself a nightclub residency, you've got yourself a restaurant residency. I'm guessing, did you go full-time pro at that point, or were you still working in some bars?
No, I was still working in bars. I was making first residency money.
Got it. All right. When did you end up going full-time pro? Because one of the first things that you did, if I'm not mistaken, is you ended up managing Illusions in Manchester. Was that very early on in your career, and how did that come about?
That's pretty much next. I did about a year or two in Lancaster performing in those residencies. The nightclub still gives me shivers.
How come?
I'm back. It had its pluses and minuses, like the one time a woman decided that she's going to check the cards in my pocket by ripping the pocket off my jacket. But at the same time, that level of alcoholism allows me to do think of a card to the same woman 36 times in a row while they're just saying, doing it again. And that covers me for 2 hours when no one else wants to see anything.
Nice.
The only decent memory of the restaurant residency that I can remember is Gordon Ramsay coming in one night. That was fun.
Really? That's cool.
I always used to use a thought transmitter for a routine where I got someone to think of any word. But obviously with him, I asked him for a four-letter word for make it easy. Comedy value.
But that's, you know what? That's important, and that's something that me and Lloyd spoke about on a podcast recently, which is there's so many magicians that don't adapt their performances to the audience in which they're performing for. I mean, going in and performing to Gordon Ramsay and saying, hey, put a four-letter word down there, is the perfect example of how you should adapt your performances. And not, you know, we all know these magicians that say, oh, you do the same five tricks to every single group of people throughout constantly and you never change that. Whilst I've seen you, you've got a huge repertoire and you change things around on very much a group by group basis. You think that's important?
Absolutely. Yeah. For them and for me, I would be incredibly bored instantly if I was doing the same set every table. I'd be done with this years ago. But yeah, you need to be aware of your audience, obviously. Not many people get quite as much flight time as I get, to be fair. It takes a while to get that habit. Whether it was illusions or working for you, I basically don't sleep.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely get to that. Okay, cool. So yeah, so how did the illusions thing come about? You're working in Lancaster, you're working at a nightclub residency, you're working at a restaurant residency, you're a decent close-up performer now, you've spent a couple of years doing it, you've not really performed on stage, and you say the next part of your journey is ending up managing one of the largest magic bars in the UK for Mark Bennett, who's a living legend. How did that all come about?
Yeah, well, I think I was going to Pure Magic every so often for my enjoyment. It's a bit of a trek from Lancaster to Manchester. Well, it's not. Back then, I thought it was a bit of a trek from Lancaster to Manchester. Again, I work for you now. That's a trip to the shops for me now. But I would go down there every so often and watch Matt and then eventually Magic Sam Hurst perform back there. And it was gone for a while. That one, the Pure, closed down. Mark went to Bristol, I believe, for a few years, and then he reopened what was Pure Magic Bar in the same place as the Manchester branch of the Illusions. By that point, I think, yes, I'd moved from Lancaster already to Manchester. I was doing some gigs in Manchester and again working in a bar. I don't want to think about that bar ever again. He reopened Illusions essentially and called for auditions. And I went into audition. That's pretty much how I got into Illusions, although I did get some help in Paul Roberts, who I knew from JB Magic, happened to wander into the building while I was doing the audition and knows me reasonably well. So I went, oh, Nemed, you've got to hire Nemed, he's brilliant. You've got to get him on there. Never seen me do a trick, but he's a nice guy. And I spent lots of money at his shop. So thanks, Paul. It's seen me do some since, I'm halfway decent.
That's cool. And Paul, I've interviewed him on the channel, obviously, is a super nice guy. But I mean, obviously, you were responsible. Mark spoke about this on his interview that he did on Magic TV. You're pretty much managing the bar at this point, weren't you? How did you
get... After a while, yeah. Wow. I was experienced in bar work and I was working at Illusions pretty much constantly by the end of the Manchester run. So many shows. The flight time that got Illusions will never be matched for close-up night, for a parlor show style situation. And just sort of naturally came into being that the manager job opened up and I took that over for a while. Wow. So I was doing the bar managing and working at least 7 20-minute shows most nights of the week. That's a lot of flight time for getting a show good. I don't think my close-up will ever be... one set of a close-up show will ever be quite as good as that one was. Back then, I was doing a pretty set show because I think that's my ideal performing situation. And I love close-up magic more than I like stage magic or anything else. But I also like doing a show rather than approaching group after group after group and showing an ambitious car. So Illusions was like... 25-minute set show with an audience, but close-up magic. So I polished that set over the time I was there. It was good.
And one thing that I've noticed from performing with you lots is you're very good at dealing with different audiences, managing hecklers, that sort of thing. Did that come from Illusions?
Absolutely. That's what I was saying earlier. The acting thing is helpful. Illusions was a perfect training ground for actual... real working magicians. Everyone that went there came out a better. Almost everyone that went there came out a better performer. It's like a gladiator pit, but fun. You have to deal with everything. And the Manchester one was situated in the print works. So there were lots of nightclubs around us, and we were open earlier. They'd come for the drinks, get pissed, and then I'd head off to the nightclubs. It was mostly stag nights and hen nights. It's pretty chaotic in there. And the Bristol one with students, pretty chaotic, but less tips. And yeah, you get to deal with every form of human being behind that bar.
So have you got any funny story, before we move on from illusions, have you got a funny story that happened while you were there?
Let's see. Most of my funny stories come from after Manchester Illusions closed, and I was doing guest spots down at the Bristol one. But there, what have we got that I can talk about? I was quite fascinated by a few of the performers that came on that were bigger names. Like John Bannon came to film some stuff at Illusions, and he was offered the chance to perform on the bar a bit. But he was filming before we opened with some like prepared audience members, and I said, "Do you want to have a go on the bar?" He's like, "Oh no, I'm not really a performer, I'm more of a creator and a bit quiet for this place. You know, have a go, go on, have a go." He went on the bar, and about 2 hours later, I was standing at the side going, "When you get off my bar, I want my tips." Everyone that goes behind that bar loved it, and he just went for it. He was having fun.
I don't want to know names, but have you ever seen anybody go to Illusions and die on their ass?
People that you wouldn't expect, yeah. They had a couple of parties that we had there, and the house performers tended to do a little bit better than the guest performers on occasion.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. There are some good ones, but there's some real smash hits. I can't remember what their act was called, but I think it's Man in a Box, and like Aaron Hayes and John T. Sparrow. And
Yeah. They had that thing with the box. They put the hand and the other hand comes out. Yeah.
Yeah, they smashed it there, for sure.
Mm-hmm. They were good. They were good when they were together. They were great. Was it around about this time? I want to bring up a story that you told me ages ago. Was it around about this time that you got booked by the chief of police for a Chinese mafia or something?
No, don't know what you're talking about. Moving on.
No, we're not moving on. I'm enjoying doing this interview because I've got kind of prior knowledge of some of your stories, so I'm trying to get them out of you. Was that?
I don't know how much I can talk about that one. I really don't. It was a weird situation. I worked a gig that I got booked by someone for someone else, and I don't know what I was doing there because nobody spoke a word of English, but whoever was accompanying around the tables instructing people to clap, that they were clapping. there were lots of unexplained bulges underneath black suits all around the room, and I didn't stay much longer than the gig finished. That was back in the Manchester time, I think, just before Illusions, the job, but while I was living in Manchester.
Okay, well, that brings me to my next question. This sounds like the dream job. You're getting to do your favourite type of close-up magic. You're not just self-employed, so you're getting a wage, I can assume. You're managing this place. Perfect. You're getting to see all these visiting acts. I mean, wow. What happened? Like, how come you ended up stop doing that?
The Manchester branch closed. No fault of anyone's, especially mine. I think I don't know the details. I really don't know the business details of it, but apparently we just didn't get to keep the lease, and the building was taken. The business, as I know, was doing very well. We just couldn't keep the building there. So Mark ended up shifting his attention back to the Bristol one. And I lived in Manchester.
Okay. So at that point, you then became Mark wanted to keep you around, but you ended up like kind of being a visiting act at Illusions, and then later on Smoke and Mirrors, and we'll get to that later on. Now, here's the question. You, at this point, built up quite a big name for yourself very early on in your career. You were 2 or 3 years into your career. A lot of the big names knew who you were because you were managing Illusions in Manchester and they were going there to perform. You had a reputation of being an incredible close-up performer. But then all of a sudden, you disappeared off the scene. When Manchester Illusions finished, you disappeared off the scene, only to reappear years later. Can you talk about what happened at that point?
Yeah, series of poor choices and bad luck. Essentially, I when Manchester Illusions closed, didn't get anything else quick enough. And I was like, had time to decide what to do. And my family lived in Spain. And I thought it might be a good idea to go over to Benidorm and see what I could do about performing cabaret shows over there. Went over there for about a year. Annoyingly, just before I left, the manager of the Bristol Illusions left the job. And I could have possibly convinced Mark to rehire me, but I decided I'd already agreed to go to Spain, so I'll go to Spain. Turns out that even though basically everyone you see on the streets in Benidorm is English, no one speaks English in the clubs. So I needed to perform it in Spanish. And I didn't do much stage really. I was just being overly optimistic. And also, I had to live with my family. Ew.
Not fun.
And then the next great choice that followed that sequence was to come back a year later for my nan's 80th birthday. We've decided to spend the day after her 80th birthday falling down the stairs and breaking her leg. And somebody had to stay here and look after her. And it wasn't anyone else in my family. So I spent basically 8-9 years as a carer. I met you at some point during that. I was doing a few gigs for you here and there, but I couldn't do too many without not being a carer anymore. She passed away. My mom came over to take over the house. She passed away. Now I'm just in this transitionary phase at the moment where I'm selling the house. And as soon as it gets sold off and split between me and my brother and sister, I can restart fully and properly. But in the meantime, in the last few years, I've been obviously working for you.
Well, we'll talk about that because obviously I met you. I met you at the British Magical Society, which I'd been a member of for a few years.
Yes, you did.
Do you want to talk about that story?
Yeah, all right, Craig. I'll talk about that story, shall I? Let's talk about that story.
Okay.
I entered the BMS parlor competition. Was 3/4 of the way through my act. Thought I had it in the bag. The other 4 competitors were good. I was better. You walked in the back. I didn't even know you were a member. Never heard of you as a member before, but you know, it's British Magical Society. It doesn't say Birmingham anywhere in the title, so it makes you sound good if you win the British Magical Society Parlour Award. So there you are, strolling in the middle of my act. And then you came on stage and crushed me. Fine, it's fine. I'm not bitter. At least you told me afterwards that I basically was doing everything that you were going to do and you had to change your act on the spot. That made me laugh. And luckily, I wasn't fast enough with my sarcasm because I was coming up to you afterwards to take the piss out of Mr. High and Mighty Craig Petty for winning. Ooh, well done. BMS Power Competition, yeah. But you stopped me and said, oh, you're quite good. You want some work? And I haven't slept since.
Oh, dear me. Yeah, that's basically exactly what happened. I mean, I was genuinely blown away watching you perform. Like you just shone more than any other competitor in that competition, and you were just there and you just had, it's very difficult performing for a room full of magicians anyway. And it probably comes from your experience at Illusions. You went out there and you had the entire audience just in the palm of your hand. And, you were doing like multiple selections and blinking ring, everything that and I was sitting at the back of the room going, man, I'm just basically doing this guy's act. I need to change it. And I did change it around. Literally.
I think that's the first and last time I ever did Ninja Rings.
Well, here's the thing. If I'd come in a few minutes after you, I probably would have lost because I had your act planned, but I didn't do it as good as you. You were doing like, it was way better than me. But because I saw you doing the stuff that I was doing, I went back to the act that I used when I won the year before, which was my card in the box and that sort of stuff, which is which is a close-up routine. I just made it work for Parler. So I won on the technicality. But I mean, you then started working with Slightly Unusual. Initially as a close-up performer. But then not too long into that journey with us, you then transitioned to the stage, didn't you? Cabaret shows initially, and then an illusion show later on. Do you want to talk about that? Because obviously, one thing that I get asked a lot on this channel is advice for close-up magicians performing on stage, and how do you transition to going for stage? Do you want to talk about how that happened with you?
Yep, you phoned me up and made me do it. That's pretty much how I become everything else except the close-up magician. You phoned me up on the way to a gig and go, oh, you've got the balloons on this one, right? Okay. This should be called Craig Comfort Zone Crusher Petty.
Yeah, it's very true.
Obviously, the acting training helped a lot with the stage transition, as in terms of where and how and when to stand on the stage and how to project my voice. That's definitely, if you don't want to be in stage magic, then going back to that question, yes, trained as an actor, it's massively helpful.
Yeah. And your first cabaret show was quite... you sometimes get people that get their first stage show and it's like... All right, okay, just down the local. Sent you.
Wait, where was mine again, Chris? Where did you send me? Where did you send me?
I sent you to Dubai for 3 weeks for your own custom built stage.
Yeah, you did. No worries there. Flying, you know, business class to Dubai, staying in a hotel, everything paid for, food, custom built stage in the middle of the mall, me and Alex. No pressure.
Gave you a load of cabaret routines you could do beforehand. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, some of them didn't work, did they? You know, some of the stuff that I suggested you do, I didn't see this ahead of time, but it didn't work in Dubai.
Yes, thankfully, the things you suggested that I didn't want to do, they wouldn't let me do anyway.
But I mean, talk about trial by fire.
Nothing scares me after that.
Yeah, I mean, that's... And then, obviously, you ended up doing a load of ships, didn't you? Which really kind of solidified your cabaret show. Any advice on trick selection when it comes to cabaret? Because I've gone on record again on this channel as saying that you've got one of the best cabaret shows I've ever seen.
It's your cabaret show.
It's not my cabaret show. You've totally made it your own. Any advice on, trick selection or dealing with an audience when it comes to performing on stage and how that differs to close-up?
Trick selection wise, I'm always just a variety kind of guy. There's going to be one, maybe two card tricks. It's going to be something quick to open or funny to open. We had a disagreement with that Dubai set on how to open and that you wanted me to do something before I talked, whereas I always like to waffle first and do something, make myself funny first and then do a trick. Dealing with the audience. Keeping their attention, I discovered on the holiday parks he sent me to, the secret to that is just a variety of pace. That's the only thing I've ever seen. If they're not listening to you at all, then you're just going at the same speed and volume and intonation all the way through. That's what I was doing when I first started doing the holiday parks, because they weren't listening to me, so I was going fast, loud and funny, and no slowing down or trying to get their attention with quiet moments or slower tricks. Which is what I picked up from other performers, mainly people like Mark James, another guy from JB Magic that I've got a lot of stuff from over the years, a lot of advice and wisdom from.
Well, you mentioned something there, which is being funny. And when you perform on stage and close up, yeah, I would say that your style is very comedic, especially your stage show. But you do it in a very different way to me. My stage show... I'm kind of very loud and obnoxious and over the top, while you do it in a more of a understated, sarcastic sort of... I've described you in the past as like the Jack D of magic, you know, and that you have that kind of very self-depreciating, very funny style. How did you find that? How did you find your persona on stage? Because you don't really have a character as such. It's not like you're dressing up in a dragon outfit or you're pulling out some guns and pretending you're a Russian guy, you know, cock off or something. You don't do that sort of stuff, but you are your own character. Nemeth Phoenix is his own character. You are unique. You are different. You are very different to a lot of people. So I suppose the question is, how do you make it comedic? How do you find your own style? And how did you make it your own over the course of the years?
I'm a mean, cynical, sarcastic bastard. Well, to be more accurate, current day performer Nemeth Phoenix is a cartoon recreation of the mean, cynical, sarcastic bastard that actually was me in my 20s and the teens. That's the personality I got over, redesigned for comedy value. I said, be yourself, unfortunately.
Okay. And then while this is happening, while you're working with Slightly Unusual, you're going out doing cabaret, you're going out doing close-up. Over this period of time, you're starting to work more and more and more with Slightly Unusual. And at the same time, you're working, you're doing your own stuff, you're doing your own gigs, and you're also doing stuff at Illusions Bar in Bristol. Of course, Mark Bennett brings you back on a very regular basis there because he knows how good you are. I want to talk about the next phase in your career, but before I do, I can't let this go. You said that you had some funny stories from Illusions or from working with me that happened after leaving Manchester. Can you shed any light on anything?
That's what I was talking about earlier. I said that most of the funny stories came from the Bristol Illusions.
Manchester. Yeah. That's what I mean. So,
which they can professionally run in Manchester for funny story.
Yeah. So, is there any funny stories from the Bristol Illusions that you can share at this point?
I think, interestingly, one of the things you said earlier was that working at Illusions might help me perform for magicians because I seem confident at that competition. That is, to me, my greatest area of weakness, and one of the reasons why no one has a clue who I am, is I am absolutely completely terrible performing for magicians. I hate performing for magicians. I do the competitions that I'm in these days just to perform for magicians to get used to that. So I hate it. I mean, I failed my first Magic Circle edition, a form of extreme personal embarrassment for someone that is working as much as I was at the time. Just because I can't stand performing for magicians, it throws me off so much.
Well, can we talk about that very quickly? Because that will, I think that's going to give people a lot of confidence, because there's so many people that ask me, oh, I want to get into the Magic Circle or a magic club or the Magic Castle or whatever it is. I've got to do an audition. I'm scared to death. What happens if I don't pass? I mean, you are, and I tell you this over and over again, and I say it on the channel, you're one of the best magicians I know. Like, genuinely, and you didn't get through on your first audition of the Magic Circle.
Yes. Advice, people. If you're auditioning for the Magic Circle, don't try and be a clever dick and come up with new stuff, especially for the audience at the circle. Just do the stuff you normally do. It will work. It won't go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong.
You can't leave it there. You need to tell us the story.
Let's see how many things went wrong. I did a multiple selection routine that I don't normally do. A final card was in my mouth. It was the King of Clubs. I was showing random cards to the spectator going, is it this one? Is it this one? He saw the Queen of Clubs, said yes. Because I thought that I'd probably picked someone a bit too far back when I was getting cards selected. So he missaw the card. So now I'm standing in the magic circle with everyone in that room knowing I've got a card folded in my mouth. And this guy said yes to a card that's not that one. Like, what do you do there? Fail. That's what you do. The reason I brought that up in the first place is because my favourite cringy memory from Illusions Bristol is when, well, my Illusions act was slick. It was ready. It was perfectly organised. And I was ready with every line I could possibly say to every drunk person in that bar. I had all my comebacks ready, but Doc Eason came to do a workshop on the card under glass, and then he came and sat in the audience and gave me a helpful, funny line. I can't remember what he said, to try and spark some performance in the show, and it just made my brain go, oh. And I just could not respond. It was embarrassing. I just died. And if it had been any other human being in that bar, I would have come back with something straight away and moved on, and it would have made the show better. Which is why I do the competitions, to try and win, sort that out. I hate performing for magicians.
Well, and we'll talk about this later on, but facing your fear is very important, you know, and I know that you've got certain goals with regards to that. You know, if only somebody had told you before your Magic Circle audition, just do the stuff that you do, don't try and be clever. If only somebody had that conversation with you,
Yeah, well, you've got to be right at least once, haven't you? If we're discussing things that someone has said to you, then we can talk about your statement. There's nothing you can do with a memorized deck that you can't do with sleight of hand and an ordinary deck.
I don't remember saying that, Nemeth. That's not true at all in any way, shape, or form. Okay. Or maybe it is. Yes, yes. I famously did say that to you, and I completely eat my words, as I now do the mem deck an awful lot. But that happens with you and me quite a lot. You'll be working on something, and I'm like, why the hell are you working on that? And then 6 months later, it becomes a huge part of what I'm doing.
Yes, it does.
Yes, I draw inspiration from you all the time. So next question, you are working for Slightly Unusual. You're working for Mark Bennett. You're going out and doing your own gigs. You're still nanned up. You're still looking after your nan, despite doing all of these gigs. You know, you've got all that going on. Your nan then passes away, and you have more free time. So you end up doing more stuff with Slightly Unusual and so on and so, and your own gigs and so on and so forth. But you also end up in a situation where you join my other company, Nonstop Kids Entertainment. Which is something you never said you would do. Something you never said, I'm going to go and do kids gigs now. I'm, you know, in fact, I remember for years me trying to get you to join Nonstop Kids, knowing that you'd be really good at it. And you kept saying no, 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 no. But then you ended up saying yes. Like, so what happened? Where did that come about? And, you know, because I want to ask you very specifically about that as well. Like, I am a huge, you know, I love performing kid shows. I do kid shows all of the time. And I absolutely hate magicians that kind of go, oh, I'm too good to do kid shows. So, you know, I think that doing kid shows makes you a better performer in every environment. And I want to know what you think, because you were so dead set against doing kid shows. And now you do more close up than you do kids. But, you know, you are exceptional. I've seen your kid show. It's exceptional.
Okay, how it happened, I have no idea. I'm assuming it went like this. You were still working with Russell Leeds back then. You mentioned to him that you think I should do a kid show. He laughed hysterically and said that could never happen. Are you serious? What kind of mental case would make Nemeth Phoenix a kids magician? You took that as a 3-year-long challenge and somehow hypnotized me. That's the only way it worked. I have no idea how else that could have happened.
I'm pretty sure you started with Nonstop Kids after Russell left, because even though we hadn't seen each other for a while, I posted a thing about, oh, Nemeth Phoenix, he was in the group for all the kids entertainers in Nonstop Kids, and I saw the post welcoming you in as an official Nonstop Kids entertainer, and he texted me and went, what the actual fuck? How the fuck has that happened?
I don't know how it's been going on this long without me being arrested or anything. It's mystifying me. I keep getting these 5-star feedback forms back from you. I'm like, how? Why won't you fire me? Why do these people keep saying I'm good at this? I don't get it. Stop. But yeah, it does make you a better performer overall. It's the one area of audience management that I didn't know anything about. And it's a very steep learning curve one, but they are evil. Kids are evil. But it's fun. It does make you a better performer. What was the rest of the question?
Any advice of performing for kids? I mean, the thing with kid shows is they're brutally honest. If they don't like your show, they'll just stand up and walk off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Much like Illusion, but yeah.
So, I mean, any advice for, you know, people that want to get into kid shows?
Why? Run! No, I mean, don't be boring. This is not the same situation as the holiday parks where you're doing varied inflections and slow pieces and different types of right. You are going fast, funny, quick tricks. Keep their attention. Yell at them if you have to. Keep them in place. Make sure that force them to watch. Just make it high energy, but keep control of them. Which is not easy. And the tricks need to be clear.
Well, one thing I've noticed about your kid show is a lot of the tricks that you do are just as impressive for the adults than they are for the kids. You see a lot of kids entertainers and they'll do stuff that's just for the kids, and it's not for the adults at all, and the adults just completely lose interest. But you're doing stuff like Miser's Dream, you're doing stuff, Rubik's Cube manipulation. You're doing stuff that's impressive for the adults, but also impressive for the kids, right?
Absolutely. You want to, you all right, Craig? You will. I'm in the middle of an interview. yeah, I think that's fair enough to keep everyone entertained. It's like they're there too. And also it helps me as the parents are actually paying attention rather than chatting at the back of the room. They're paying attention to their kids as well, which means their kids are going to be slightly better behaved, hopefully.
Great advice.
It's a win-win. I can't just be doing basic kid stuff. I'm a magician first, a kid entertainer afterwards. I need to be doing something that requires some skill and some magician ability. Otherwise, I'd just be going mad.
No, that makes total sense. And obviously, off the back of doing kid shows, you ended up joining the Illusion Show as well and doing illusions, which you're the most reluctant illusionist I've ever met. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you mean the box show, the boxes, the thing with the boxes that we do.
Yes, yeah. The thing with the boxes that we do, yes.
Yeah. It's great. It pays better than the others. Hey! I like it. It's fun. It's good to perform a two-man show with you. We've made it very funny. We filled a lot of the gaps between the boxes with good stuff. I basically sneakily made you make it into a cabaret parlor show with some good tricks and got rid of a few of the boxes, because how many times can a girl get in a box, disappear, and then come back? It's the same fucking trick. It's three different boxes. I don't care. It's the same trick.
It's a different trick. I mean, they're disappearing in different ways, and other things are happening to them, and they're getting cut up or squashed flat.
When I was a kid watching illusion shows, before I was a magician watching Paul Daniels and all that, they just don't get the logic of some of them. Like, you've got a box, someone gets in it, and you stab a load of things through it, and you take them out, and they're there. Great. But if you're stabbing a load of swords through a box, and then you open the box, and there's nobody there, what difference did the swords make? I don't get it. If she's not there, then the swords don't matter. It's just a disappearing, reappearing box again. I have issues with the illusion show, but we're getting there. We're making it good.
You will not rest until the illusion show has no illusions in it. That's funny.
I like the split press. The split press is good, although spike blades through nothing.
Okay, yeah. The point is.
All that out, aren't you?
No, absolutely not. You know these interviews, nothing gets cut.
Been a trend recently in podcasts towards being belittling to close-up magic and praising stage shows, so it's going to be nice to hear the opposite for a change.
Yeah, well, I know that your passion is always close-up magic, but you are one of those people that, and you don't see many people like this, that perform cabaret, stage, kids, illusion shows. You just talked about writing your own mentalism show. Like, you do absolutely everything. You run the gauntlet and you do so many aspects of magic, which is super impressive. Not many people do that. My question is, I've spoken to, let me give you two examples. So Michael J. Fitch and John Archer have completely different polarizing views when it comes to this, having spoken to them on the channel. Michael J. Fitch, who does kid shows and also is a very high-end cabaret performer, says that doing kid shows helps him as a cabaret performer. And John Archer has said on this channel, when I interviewed him, you can always tell somebody on stage at a cabaret or a stage show when they perform kids, because they come across as kiddy when they're doing cabaret shows as well. What's your viewpoint on that?
Okay, first off, about the doing all sorts of magic, that's just something that I have to do. I'm interested in it all. I want to know it all. I'd get bored just doing cards or something like that. You had Tom Crosby on. He was talking about how his character is one thing and he can only do certain tricks. And he's probably right. He's going to do better as a character like that in the long run. He's got a set character, but I I just don't have any interest in doing that. I want to be doing everything. I want to be the hypnotist, mentalist, close-up magician, parlor, stage, illusionist, balloon, modeling, kids show guy. I like to work. Yeah. I like to keep busy. And as to the other thing, we're treading into one of my ranty territories here. I'm on the Michael J. Fitch side to start with. I think kids shows absolutely helps you with your cabaret. I understand John Archer's point to a point, but I'm going to add an extra... a little tack on to the sentence that I add on to others in other places in magic as well. You can tell someone who's a kids performer performing cabaret by their kiddie style, ... if they're a moron. It doesn't take much mental effort to not do that. Your kids' gigs give you more stage time, more performing time, but if you're a good magician that puts thought into the show, then you will be aware of the difference between the two and you won't do that. It's not my usual area where I rant about this. My normal area is on the overused phrase, if you learn from DVDs, you're just going to copy the performer. ... If you're a moron. Otherwise, feel free to learn from DVDs and just put your own style to it. It's a lot easier for some. I like books as well, but I've learned a lot from DVDs. I will say that in my first year in Lancaster, in the white jacket, I was definitely Greg Wilson. But after that, I learned my lesson.
I think there's a lot of people that start off as Greg Wilson, isn't there, really, to be honest? That's really what you said there makes absolutely sense. Yeah, complete and total sense. One area that you haven't yet done much with, just to throw it out there, is pickpocketing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's not an area I know much about, despite you trying to send me to a gig at one point. I see the line on that one. You can't send me to a gig I know nothing about, Craig. Nothing. It is an interesting area. I don't like, oddly considering I just said I like learning from DVDs, I don't like learning online. I didn't watch a single lecture during lockdown or do a show. Something about it I just doesn't appeal to me. If James Brown ever does another in-person style course, then I'll try and add that sort of stuff to my repertoire.
Didn't you do some training for street magic as well?
That was the first thing I did after Manchester closed, before going to Spain, where I went to Mario Morris's school of busking and learned how to do street performing. Okay, that's one area where I have to admit defeat. I went to that course, I did the course. He made me do one street show at the end. I don't really remember it. I practically blacked out. I spent the next summer in Stratford-on-Avon watching Gary Knights doing his show and chatting to him and him telling me to give it a go. No, I'm fine with 2,000 people in a theatre or the middle of Dubai Mall with no experience or a room full of kids or a close-up corporate or squaddies or really dodgy bars in Salford you send me to. But street audiences is terrifying. I will have to crack that one day, just to add it to the list.
I want to ask you another couple of questions because obviously we kind of, where we are now, you know, we've kind of caught up because now you're incredibly busy. You took a few months off over lockdown. You decided not to do anything. That was fine. You just carried on learning and rehearsing and practicing. You're now just as busy as you always have been with close up and kids and blah, 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 blah. But I want to address a couple of questions before we go any further. The first question is, you do some incredibly technical sleight of hand. Like way more technical than I do, especially with cards. And, you know, I've seen you perform in every environment, mix and mingle, table magic, like really angly stuff like the Bertram change. Which I suppose my question is, I've never seen anyone else be able to perform that type of material in that sort of environment. Like other people learn it, but then when it comes to going out and doing it at a gig, the kind of like, no, I'll stick to hopping halves, or no, I'll stick to my ambitious card routine. But you actually do this stuff, really complicated, really angly, sensitive, sleight of hand with cards that looks incredible, and you pull it off and nobody sees anything. How, Nem? I've never asked you this before, and this is a genuine question that I want to know. How do you do that? Like, because I've tried and I always end up flashing. So I keep that stuff for just fun or magic conventions and stuff.
Nobody ever told me I wasn't supposed to.
Fair enough.
And I just love it. It's what I like to do. The Bertram change in particular, one of the DVDs that I have over the years, the Ross Bertram one, which is a copy of a VHS filmed in the 50s, the most twee video you ever watched, but it's probably the most rewatched one. It's such good stuff on there. I love that change, and it's not particularly angly once you do it right. Going from the Miracle change to the Bertram change is just a really nice sequence. It looks good. And I can pretty much work out the angles for it anywhere. And I suppose it's influences, really, before working for you. And the people that I would study are people. I mean, I remember watching a Mark Oberon lecture showing you what he would do around the table. It was just ridiculous. I mean, I didn't realize myself that you could do that sort of technical stuff to in that kind of environment, but why not? It's fun. It's more of a challenge.
Absolutely. Which brings us bang up to date. And I suppose the next question I've got to ask you is, you're super busy at the moment, and towards the end of these interviews I always kind of leave it with one last question, which people generally answer very quickly, which is, what's next? What's left on your magical bucket list? And most people go, I want to do this, I want to do that. This is going to take us a while, because
everybody else you've had on this is a famous established celebrity magician that's had their career and is quite comfortable, whereas still nobody knows who I am.
Yes, that is very true. Nobody knows who you are. But... like, I'm a huge fan. You know that, like, I've taken you to business conferences in the past. I've twisted your arm and made you come to motivational gigs and stuff, speaking gigs, and, you know,
the cult meetings. Those ones.
Yes, the cult meetings. Yes, I've taken you to cult meetings where I've spoken about business success and stuff like that. And one thing that I talk about at those sort of gigs is the importance of setting a goal and how important it is to have long-term and medium-term and long-term goals and make them aspirational and shoot for the stars. If you don't hit them, you know, that sort of stuff. And then we were at a gig a month ago and you were like, I want to show you my goal list. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Show me your goal list. And then you brought out a book. like proper bound book, like all printed out with like multiple goals in every single aspect of magic and everything, with time frames and so on and so forth. So I want to kind of delve a little bit deeper into that, you know, for everybody that's for people that know you already, because I know there's going to be a lot of people that are watching this that know you, but also for people who don't know you that have just met you through this interview. Why have you set so many goals? How important is it to set those goals? And can you share some of the goals that you want to achieve with us?
Okay, first off, kids, OCD is bad for you, but sometimes it can be useful. I'm 10 years on from where I was at Illusions. And I've been working regularly and should be better known than I am as ill at this point. And I've got 10 years to catch up on. So I sat down and let the OCD free and go for it. Go for it. Take over my brain. Normally that just means an incredibly anal organization of my magic stuff. But I thought I'd direct it towards paper this time. And I think it's very important. I need to do
There it is, the plan.
It's mental. I've listed everything that a human being could possibly need to break down in their life. It's insane.
you've even got like FISM in there, haven't you?
Yeah, that was mental. That was the point where I went too far. That's the bit that should have been edited out at the end, where I was like, just put whatever you think in your head down the paper. That's way down the list. It's probably, yeah. It covers everything, basically. I'm basically starting from scratch, pretty much. I've got the work, but I need to work on everything else. Skills, marketing, my reputation, my releases, my position in the Magic, and it's all cracked down here from physical stuff and diet and exercise and style changes to everything I need to do in Magic, from sorting out certain things in here to finishing off this act or that act. Competition stuff. I'm sick of doing the small competitions. I did them specifically for the reason of trying to get used to performing to magicians. I've won a fair number of sort of regional, local ones, but it's kind of pointless now to build up just a huge number of those for no reason. Might as well start going to the bigger ones. Oh, after I got my Leamington Day of Magic cut back off Steve Della. I'm not doing that. I'm not stopping doing that one until it's back here. And then we can give up on that one. After that, it's Magic Circles competition time, really. Maybe the London Magic Convention. I don't know. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, you should enter the London Magic Convention competition. Definitely, 100%. Knowing the stuff that you do, you could have won it this year.
Competitions are fun. I'd like to go to the big ones now, preferably the ones that don't ban me as well.
Oh, you can't drop that. You need to tell that story.
Which one? Sorry.
They won't ban you for entering a competition. We can't leave that hanging.
I may have over-dramatised that slightly for comedy value. Essentially, they changed the rules of the competition in the BMS after I won it 4 times in a row to make it that the previous year's winner can't enter the competition. I would argue that slightly just basically weakens the quality of the winner each year. But until the standard to win is lower, maybe you should try being better. But that's me.
Well, I can relate to that. The BMS did the same thing to me. I won the parlor competition so many times in a row that they decided not to hold the competition anymore. Mm. So, yeah.
Magic clubs are fun. Magic circle, that one's a good one.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I'm super excited to hear that you're entering the circle competition, because I think you could do so well in that.
If I haven't missed it, I'm not entirely sure. I'm fairly sure it used to be register in December, perform in January, so I might be a bit late, but hey.
If not, it gives you a year to put that act together for the following week.
Mm-hmm. One of the crazinesses in here. I literally have a day-by-day tick-down on the front, so the day it has to be all finished by. I'm a crazy person.
I like to think of you as organised.
Yeah. this is a lot of money.
Well, actually, I want to talk to you about being organised, because for some random reason, every week I get asked on this channel, how do you organise your magic props? How do you organise your magic DVDs? And I say to people, relatively chaotically, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you've seen the state of my warehouse, my office, my home office. You've been...
It makes me cry.
My close-up case.
I remember a £400 coin set down the cushions of your sofa, and you went, oh, I've been looking for that for a couple of years.
Yeah, and another one in the toilet.
Every time you get out of my car, you've left about £3,000 worth of magic behind.
But you are ridiculously organised.
Yeah.
Have you got any advice on storing props and managing your learning resources? Because that's a question that comes up an awful lot, and I've never seen anyone do it like you.
That's because no one else is this OCD. But yeah, I mean, I know where absolutely everything is, down to the drawer up there with the gimmick cards that I might need to use, like double backers or something. I know how many are in them. It's written on the box, and also on a Dropbox list that I can tick off when I use them. So I may have taken it a little bit further than necessary to not be you. Essentially, a cabaret case, a close-up case in the kids' case over there. The live stuff that could be used for them there, and there. Stuff I'm being learning over there, and resources down there. Whiteboard on the wall telling me what I'm learning, what I'm improving. Sheets on the wall that tell me every single trick I've ever learned. Dropbox has all that information. Every trick I've ever learned that I've performed. I have a file with the timestamp on the DVD or the page on the book, and also a video of me explaining it to myself quickly without the extra details. Send help.
Well, you know what? I speak to so many magicians and they go, how do you remember all these tricks that you do, Craig? You perform, you know, thousands of tricks on Magic TV. You seem to have a limitless memory. And a lot of magicians do forget tricks that they learn. You know, by doing a quick video of yourself, of a trick that you like, that's never going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, makes sense to me. And I have them on my keychain. So I can USB 3 port, C port straight into my phone and remind myself in an emergency. I don't need to, but I can.
Well, I've got one other question for you, and you've obviously got lots of goals. Are we ever going to see a product release from you? Because I know that's one of your goals, and you are very, very creative. And one area that you're creative in is presentations. You come up with so many unique presentations and lines and bits of business. I remember you saying to me, you know, you can steal a trick I do, that's not a problem, but don't take one of my lines because that is so closely.
Very, very, very much the case, yeah. If I improve a move or a trick, take it, I don't care. Steal my line, I find you. I like my original lines. I am a decent routiner, a decent scripter. I struggle with creating new ideas. I have had a few over the years, but we're also in an area, another ranty area for me. In my head, there are three types of magicians in the magic community. There are magic creators who are revered and known. They are the name magicians.
Yeah.
You have performer magicians of any standard, from pulling out packet trick after packet trick up to higher than me, who are not known because they are not creators. There are very few, the third one is a very few rare, except the very few rare exceptions. People like Jason England, who don't create stuff, but as far as I know, but are so very skilled that that's what they're known for, but they are very few and far between. To have a name in magic, you seem to have to be a magic creator, but you don't have to create anything good. You put out one trick, no matter how crap it is, and you are a name in magic. I've had many, many crap ideas. I don't want to release a crap idea. If I'm going to release something, it's going to have to be something good. So it's going to take me a little bit longer. I've got a few ideas that I'm working on. I've got a project with you.
We're working on a project together, aren't we?
Yeah. Hopefully that'll happen soon enough. I want to come up with a few more things. I want that sort of side of my career to take off a bit more now. I want to release a few ideas that I've had. Possibly lecture at a point as well.
I would love to see a lecture from you. and I'd love to see a lecture with advice, not just a lecture on tricks, but you've got a wealth of knowledge and experience as somebody who's gone out and done it and bought the t-shirt. You do more gigs in a month than most magicians do in a year. Like, you've got so much knowledge and experience of every performing situation. See a lecture on that would be incredible.
Yeah, well, I believe one thing, yes, I agree. I'd like to do that in my lecture. My lecture would be like a quarter worker advice, a quarter tricks, a quarter telling people off for bad taste, getting to burn their playing card ties, and a quarter a little essay I like to call How to Be a Magician Without Being a Dick. But that's the lecture. I've, as well as that, I think we've been discussing that you want me to do a few things like that for you, don't you?
Well, yeah, I was going to announce that. So, yeah, so anybody who's got this far into the interview, I am proud to announce that Nemid is going to be joining Netrix. And he's going to be there specifically to do a whole bunch of courses on real-world advice for people that are going out gigging. Because, there's the, you know, there's streaming platforms out there and there's DVDs and there's books, but there's massively very little on how to actually improve as a gigging magician and how to actually get better and how to deal with this situation and this situation and this situation. So we're going to have a whole bunch of courses with Nemid, and they're all going to be all about advice on what to do. That, you know, this is a situation that happens at a gig. What do you do about it? This is a situation that happens at a gig. What to do about it? And it's going to be Nemid to camera talking about this and giving advice on how to actually deal with that situation. I'm so excited because originally when I asked you to do this, you said no. And I eventually managed to convince you. And I'm so excited that you've said yes.
Again, with the hypnosis, same as this. I don't know how you got me on here. I must be the first Talk Magic interviewee that you had to practically force to get on here.
Yeah, I literally had to beg in order to get you on this.
I'm amazed how far we got through, to be honest. I thought I'd give you 30 minutes.
So I'm so incredibly excited that you are part of Netrix, and you are one of the reasons we've delayed the launch is because we want to have some content off you before we actually launch, so that, you know, the name Nemid Phoenix is there on launch. So we'll be I know we're filming some stuff very early in the new year, because you've got a slightly less chaotic schedule in January in the week. So
I have a day off in January, yes.
So we're going to bring you in and make you work in the office filming content.
One of the things in here says work smarter, not harder. The reason I've had to put that there is I can't work harder. There's only 24 hours in the day.
So you said there's only three types of performer, only three types of magicians: performers, creators, and
the either people like Jason England, who are known for their extreme skill, or people who, even though he is a creator, Max Maven is known more now for just being the fount of all knowledge. You know, the legend people, the creators, and the working magicians that get a lot of nothing, a little bit of disrespect.
Do you think you can transition between the two? Because I've seen so many creators that aren't great performers. And you can just tell that the stuff that they actually release, it's never been worked in the real world. It's just terrible. Can you be a creator and also a really good performer?
Well, you're the only one I really know, so obviously I think so. I think there's no reason why you can't be the other way, but I don't see any reason why you can't be that way either as well. There are lots of good creators that are also good performers that I can think of, if I really think. Yes, there are loads.
Yeah.
But you're only a name magician once you've released something, even if it's nothing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree. It's one of the reasons why so many magicians rush to create something, because they want that name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got massive respect for you that you've kind of gone, no, I'm not going to release something shit. I'm gonna wait, and I'm going to actually bring something out that adds value to the community. And that's great.
The plan, anyway. I'll come up with it eventually.
That's awesome. That is absolutely brilliant. Right, you know what? I want you to share one more funny story, because I love your funny stories. It doesn't have to be. It could be something to do with slightly unusual and working with me. If you want to, feel free to throw me under the bus. I don't care. But I need one more funny story from you. I don't mind what.
You put me under pressure by calling me funny. I'm not funny. I'm weird.
One more harrowing story that people hear and they go, oh my gosh.
Okay, I don't know. I think my first semi-paid sort of performance after Lancaster, when I wasn't really a magician anymore for a while, but doing bar work, was a guy in the bar that I worked in came in after a 25-year prison sentence to celebrate his release. And the evening went from, wow, that's amazing, to, wow, that's amazing, tell me how it's done, to, wow, that's amazing, I'll pay you to tell me how it's done, to, tell me how that's done and I'm going to cut your throat. And then I was guided out of the building. Oh, I know my favourite moment in Illusions, my favourite moment of all time, my favourite comedy moment. Paul Daniels behind the bar, performing for one of our anniversary parties, yelling over to Debbie, asking for something or other, like a pen or a sharpie or something, going, Debbie, 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 Debbie. And her turning around in the middle of Illusions going, fuck off, Paul, I'm talking!
Wow. I tell you, one of my favorite Nemid Phoenix stories that happened, well, I mean, it was a story about both of us, and I've never told it on the channel before, and we'll finish things off with this, and you can tell the story by all means, was that gig that we went to in Birmingham, the Illusion Show. It was at a Christmas a few years ago where the actors were doing that whole fake wedding thing.
I felt so sorry for those guys. That sort of weird performance art thing they were doing reminded me of drama school days, but it was never gonna go well for them.
No.
It was the weirdest setup. Trying to put an Illusion show into a room while these guys have a full setup, walk around art show, pretending to have a fake wedding around the tables that these guys are having a corporate meal in.
But they were also quite laddie corporate people. Wasn't going to work, was it?
I mean, I've seen other performers struggle before, but I've never come back into a room to see them all crying before.
Yeah. So it's turning around and going, it's horrible, they're horrible. And then we're thinking, oh, we've got to go on stage in a few minutes.
Best introduction we ever got. Absolutely. What was it? Something along the lines of, okay, well, that was shit. Let's hope the next lot aren't crap. It's these guys. That's the magic. Let's hope they don't disappoint. Luckily, we had our secret weapon. You were mildly pissed. So fully prepared to just rant and shout at people until they shut up and laughed.
It works.
It's the right approach with that crowd, definitely. One guy kept standing up in the front and interrupting you, and he just went off on a 10-minute Jimmy Carr tirade of abuse. And he loved it, and they all loved it, and they loved us, and it didn't make anyone cry.
But it's another example of adapting to your audience. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get yourself into a situation. That's something that you do so well. You get yourself into a situation where you're kind of like, okay, my normal stuff is not going to work here. So I'm going to have to kind of go down the different route and do something else.
Absolutely.
Big finish. I've got one final question for you, which is something that I think that you can answer. And it's another question that's come up on the channel an awful lot, which is practice. So many people ask me, how do I practice effectively? You know, I sometimes don't feel like I want to pick up a deck of cards. I can't be asked, but I know I need to practice. I want to learn new stuff, but I can't be bothered. Anybody who's watched this interview and seen you fiddle with cards for 2 hours, you practice constantly. And it's been an advert for the 1914 Providence deck the entire way through as well.
This is one sexy deck of cards, ladies and gentlemen.
So,
I was not a sexy fan, but that was a sexy deck of cards.
It is a sexy deck of cards. It's my favourite deck.
System-wise, over-organised. This is where I will advocate just going straight for the OCD. Over on that wall, I have a whiteboard. It has three columns. It has routines that I already do that I think I can now do better and haven't improved over the years and need to add to. I have been doing the chop cup exactly the same for 15 years. It's time to polish that a bit. I have routines that I want to learn, and I have moves that I'm working on. In that drawer, in this set of drawers, everything I haven't learned yet that I own, it's a physical prop. in the top one is the stuff that I'm currently working with and working on. I have set times for doing that. The moves, I tend to pick a trick that I want to learn that teaches the move and uses the move rather than learn the move on its own. Some people go the other way. I don't know about you. Psychologically, if you're, I can't say that I've never gone, I just don't want to pick up a card. Pack of cards can't be asked. But question whether if you're doing that for a long term, whether you actually still want to do it.
Yeah, that's very true.
I do lose motivation myself. I tend to try and find it again. That's one of the benefits of being interested in every part of magic. I get bored of cards. I study mentalism for a while. I do have occasional moments of what am I doing this for. Very rare these days. One of them, a direct cure. Listen to, what is it? I think it's his Penguin Lecture. Josh Jay's Penguin Lecture, where he answers this question. And like, it just talks about his passion for magic and how he couldn't imagine not wanting to practice it. It's kind of inspirational. It's motivational. Okay. It makes you go, rah.
Joshua Jay is a great performer. He really is. It's nice to hear you say something nice about him, as you're the one that spread the rumours that he sounds like Kermit the Frog.
You're such a cock. Such a cock. I happened to notice that he sounded a bit like Kermit, and I happened to say it to him at the Blackpool stand, briefly forgetting that he's American, and Americans don't do banter or sarcasm or, yeah, humour. And I don't think he took it very well. I doubt that he actually remembers it in reality, but it always feels like it, because I'm the only person that can walk straight through the vanishing ink stand without being stopped by anyone.
That's because they issue pictures of your face to all of the staff in the big bouncy castle stand going, if you see this guy, don't sell him anything.
I'm quite sure he hasn't got the slightest clue who I am and doesn't remember it at all. Great shot.
Yeah, he definitely knows about the Kermit thing, though, and that's
he
all
definitely
you.
Sounds like Kermit too. He does. He sounds like Kermit the Frog. I'm sorry, he does.
When you told me that, every time I hear it,
he's got a chiseled jaw. He's 6 foot something. He's pretty American. He can cope with just sounding a little bit like Kermit the Frog.
So now we've insulted the national treasure in the magic community. I think this has been a very successful interview.
It's been tolerable, and I have spoken more than I expected. I usually subscribe to the Al Pacino school of interviewing and just sort of glare at you until you ask me questions and go away. But you made me do it. I've done it. Here it is. Stop asking. It's all over. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yes, but if people want to see more from you, obviously they can see you on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Also watch this space, because you are one of the goals for next year, and I have a very similar goal actually, is we are going to get, you know, now I'm back in the magic circle and you've obviously been in the magic circle for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We are going to be spending more time down on the club room on a Monday, so if you're in the UK and absolutely, you like and you're in the magic circle, me and Nemid are going to be a familiar face down there. We're going to be trying to go down there quite regularly.
How unfortunate for you all.
But also, you go to a lot of magic conventions. If people see you there and they want some advice or guidance or help, you are very approachable despite your kind of general apathy towards
people. I am actually quite friendly despite looking like I want to kill you.
Yeah, you are.
I have resting murderer face. I'm aware of this.
And on that, I'm out. Nem, this is...
Be aware, I'm not interested in your politics or your cliques. I am interested in magic.
As it should be. Now, if people want to communicate with you, obviously they can... You're quite active on Facebook. You can... They can send you a friend request on Facebook just by going for Nemid Phoenix, right?
Yeah, make a change from the fake women.
Oh, yeah.
Getting one of those every day at the moment.
And you do have an Instagram account, right? But it's not...
It's going to get more active. It's on the list.
It's on the list. So what's the Instagram? I'll put that down at the bottom of the screen.
It's either Nemid Phoenix Magic or N Phoenix Magic. It's one of those.
I will find out and I will put the correct URL down below. No problem. And obviously, when Netflix launches, you can see a lot more of Nemid on there. Nemid, genuinely... This has been an incredible interview. Merry Christmas, my friend. Thank you very much for being the interview for Christmas Day right here on Magic TV. I've been wanting to get you on this channel since I started the interviews, and finally I've got you.
A lot of whining and begging and pleading.
Yeah, a lot.
No bribery. That would have worked. Bribery would have worked.
If only you could bottle hindsight. I should have known about that beforehand. But thank you very much, my friend. Leave a comment down below. Let Nevin know what you think. I would love to hear your thoughts. And like I said, if you haven't already connected with him, please do so. Have a great Christmas. We are going to be back here again tomorrow with a very special video. So on Sunday, there's going to be the most requested interview this channel's ever had. We're going to be doing the hows and whys of the quiver. You've seen some of the routines on that. It's really cool. So check that out. There's also a whole bunch of other stuff coming on. So make sure that you check all of that out. And one more time, Nevin, thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.